Thanks, everybody, for tuning into The Short Thing today. It's Friday, February 18th. Warren and Ryan here with you. Check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app as well. Today, we will lots of stuff in the golf world we're going to talk about. Lots of things going on, lots of off the course stuff going on right now. It's really taken a shot to the forefront here this past week, so got to talk on that. We got NBA All-Star Weekend. I was taking a look at some All-Star Game bets. I got one I like. I think it's got a lot of value there. And there's also some NFL cleanup from the weekend from the Super Bowl that got lost in the shuffle that we could discuss as well. Ryan, how's it going over there?
It's going well. I had the day off yesterday, got the day off today. So we've been cooking over here for the last couple of days, just kind of maxing and relaxing and having a good time.
Burning the vacation days early, I see.
Au contraire, mon frère.
What?
You know, just stepping up for just being a company guy, being a team guy, being a locker room guy, glue guy. A couple other people need some hours. So you know what? Your boy was willing to take a couple days off so that those people could get said hours.
Gotcha. It's always funny how one complains when that happens, not knowing that it's going to happen to them.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's just how it works. You got to complain when you're not the one that it happens for. And then when it does happen, you just, you know, bask in the glory.
Don't think you really have to complain because you know it's going to happen.
Yeah, but in the moment, absolutely have to complain.
All right. In the golf world right now going on, I don't know if you're aware of what's going on. Have you seen the rumblings? We've talked about this before, but now it's really coming to a head.
So this is about I want to get the name right, the Dubai Tour? Saudi Tour, yeah.
It's about the Saudi Tour and what the Saudis are doing right now. They've done it. We talked about it when they bought Newcastle, who's in the Premier League, the Saudi investment firm, which is pretty much just the government. The government is able to throw a bunch of money at things because the Saudi strategy is, we know our biggest thing is about oil and gas, and we're seeing that oil and gas is becoming, people are going away from that, and we don't want all of our economy and all that stuff to be based on that. So we're going to money whip, let's buy a Premier League team and let's try and fund a golf tour. So people are like, well, you know what? Saudi Arabia is not bad. Maybe to grow their tourism and things along those lines. Pretty much what they call it is their sports washing. And that's what they're doing in golf right now, as they're trying to they're doing the SGL, the Saudi Golf League, which have been rumored for a while, but now it's really ahead, as they've offered, like we talked about this, I think a couple weeks ago, but like at the end, but they talked about Bryson's been offered like $100 million to sign up, like straight off the bat. Phil's probably been offered about the same. And I'd say Dustin Johnson, those are their three big guys. They've probably all been offered around $100 million just to sign up. And they're trying to get these guys to break away from the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour is saying, if you play on the Saudi Golf Tour or accept the Saudi Golf Tour, you'll be banned from the PGA Tour for life. Which doesn't affect the majors. Like, they could still play in the PGA Championship, the British Open, Masters, and U.S. Open. Like, they could still play in the majors. They just can't play in the Players or any other PGA Tour event. And so they have to decide that. And there's a lot. Phil is the guy that's really taken charge of the most outspoken about this. I don't know if you've read any of the articles, but like yesterday, he's got a biography coming out, but it's just like Alan Shipnuck writing it, but he's been interviewed for it. He said, yeah, I know the Saudis. They killed Jamal Khashoggi. They're scary MFers. It's scary when you get in bed with them, but like they execute gays, and like he knows everything that's wrong with the Saudis and everything that they're doing. But he goes, this is an opportunity that could shape the PGA Tour forever. And like, it might be too good to pass up. And like, I don't even know if I want the Saudi league to fail, but it just puts pressure on the PGA Tour just a little, whatever. So Phil's at that.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I mean, I think he's right. You know, in today's day and age of cancel culture that, you know, something that you said 10 or 15 years ago can come bite and come back and bite you in the ass. I mean, he's 100% right. Like, you know, that country as a whole, I wouldn't say as a whole, but, you know, they're known for doing some pretty horrific things. And so now to more or less support them by playing in their tour because they're going to give you the biggest bag, probably not the best look for some of these golfers.
Yeah, then the thing is like Phil is his biggest problem. I also think Phil is like borderline as a golfer. I know this is tough to say after he won the PGA Championship last year, but that was like a shot in the dark of like the craziest thing that's happening. Like, he's been borderline irrelevant from the tour for a while. I shouldn't say irrelevant, but like, he rarely contends. Like, he's been a bad golfer. He's 51 right now, and like, he's just been a poor golfer. But his biggest thing is that like the tour is not giving the players enough money. Like, they're sitting on all this money. They're not giving it to them. Like, they've raised purses. Like, the winner of this week's event gets like 2.1 million. The purses are like 12 to 15, 16, 17 million now. Like, there's a bunch of money in it. And he's just complaining. And then he's like, I'm mad. I don't own the rights and everything. Like, because Phil's thing is he wants to sell NFTs is what he says. I could make money off of NFTs and everything, but I don't own my media rights. So I can't sell NFTs and profit off of that. Like, all this comes down to is money. And he's mad that the tour has control over all the rights and everything, which when I was laughing when we first started the Skype call before we started recording, I see this from Brendan Porath from the San Francisco Gate article. It says, I don't think players should be involved in the tour. Phil said, I don't think we should have any say. I think the commissioner should run the tour just like he did. I'm going to support it. That was a couple of years ago. Funny how those things have changed right now. And I'm not saying that he doesn't have a point about like them being able to sell like NFTs, as dumb as that sounds, and like there's money to be made there, and like them not owning their media rights and stuff like that. Like, he might have he probably has a little bit of a gripe. Maybe they get a little bit of a different share on that. But overall, I think he's just blowing like a bunch of hot air, and he's just looking like a fool, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. You know, we've seen him kind of do things like that before, but, you know, I agree with you saying Phil hasn't really been, you know, relevant on the tour. So it's like, you know, if he can posture a little bit and make himself relevant, or even so, maybe he's trying to trick the Saudis into giving him a bag to go play. You don't really don't have to play that good at golf, I'm assuming. You know, I don't know I'm not familiar with the layout of how it's going to be, if it's going to be exactly like we have over here, the PGA Tour, the FedEx Cup, whatever. You know, but Phil is also not a dumb man by any means. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of using this as back channels to find a way to get a bag outside of the NFTs.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, Phil's one of the three guys that the Saudis have offered, I think, $100 million to if he decides to join the tour. And so the setup over there for the Saudi league is going to be 12 to 15 events. I think 10 of them are going to be in the U.S., and it sounds like a bunch of them are going to be at Trump courses. Those are the ones that at least have been announced, the one at Bedminster and then at Doral. They seem to be the two that are going to host the first couple of them. There'll be 50-man fields, I think, or 40-man fields, 54 holes, no cut, and like appearance fees if you play in them, and like big purses. So it's not like when you go play the tour and you have to make the money that you have to earn the money by making a cut. Like, you're getting the appearance fees when you go there, like you're securing the bag. So that's what the kind of layout is. And now they said, and like Phil and Bryson are the two guys taking the brunt of the heat, I would say right now. And then DJ's the third guy. He's saying nothing, but it seems like he's kind of in the mix there. I'm going to be, I don't think really DJ is a surprise that he's going to play in this. He hears, oh, you're paying me $100 million just to sign up. I think he'll just be like, whatever. I'll take the money. But so they allegedly have 20 players already locked in and ready to do this. And they're supposed to announce it at the Players Championship, which is in 3 weeks, which is obviously the PGA Tour's the biggest event, the Players Championship. And I was listening to the No Laying Up podcast this week, and they were talking about this. They said they've heard like the end of June is when this thing can start. So it's like pretty close. And there's a lot of golfers, like the drama off the golf course is nuts. Like Charlie Hoffman this past week got a bad ruling, or got a ruling that didn't go his way, and he didn't know the ruling. Like he dropped a ball, and when he went, the ball was ruled in play, and then it rolled in the water. And he thought that that rule had changed because it happened to Ricky Fowler a couple years ago. But no, it's still a penalty shot. And he goes to Instagram to like bitch and moan about the tour not protecting any players or anything like that because he got a bad break on the tour, and he's like tagging the Saudi Golf League. You got Kramer Hickok, who's a Dallas guy, does an interview with some podcast, and he's like, yeah, I think the majors need to raise their prize pool and their fund. The funny thing about Kramer Hickok, I've met him, nice guy. I've enjoyed when I've been around him, but the funny thing about Hickok is he's never played in a major, and he's complaining about the major's prize fund. Like,
well, see, I think that gives him more credibility.
But he's never had the chance to qualify for it. He hasn't been good enough to play in a major.
Exactly. And the fact that he's still, saying that that's what should happen, I think gives him more credibility. If it was a guy like Brooks or, all the big names, if they were the ones like, oh yeah, you know, they should, cause what you're really saying is they should be giving me more money. They should be, offering me more money. But the fact that a guy like Hickok can say that and is willing, is willing to say that, and he hasn't even been able to qualify for a major, I think that gives him more credibility, and that he's fighting for the, or not fighting for, but kind of standing up a little bit for the rest of the golfers on the PGA Tour outside of just himself.
I disagree there. Because who is he to say the majors need to raise the pool? Like, he was going after the Augusta and the Masters saying they need to raise their prize fund. He's never played in the Masters. So why are you talking about something you've never played in? Or like,
he asked the question, or did he just bring it up?
He was asking about prize money. He goes, oh, I think the majors, he brought it up. He pretty much said Augusta doesn't give enough money to the event.
Yeah. See, again, I think that gives him a little bit more credibility. I get where you're coming from. Like, hey guy, how about you playing it one time before you start bashing Augusta. But again, in my opinion, that kind of makes it seem like he is, standing up or speaking out for other golfers outside of just himself.
But the thing is, when you go to a golf tournament, or you put a golf tournament on, you're not watching to say, oh, I want to watch Kramer Hickok. I want to watch Charlie Hoffman. I want to watch who's some spare, Andrew Putnam, or like any of those guys.
That's taking strays here.
Huh?
So a couple guys taking strays.
But these guys are ranked 90th in the world. You're not in the hundreds in the world. You're not turning on a golf tournament to watch them.
You're right. But so then in that sense, why not just make a super league of the PGA Tour and just get the top 10 or top 15 guys and just only play tournaments with them?
Well, that's what the Saudis are trying to do.
Yeah. Okay. So then I guess it's a great idea, and let's get it rolling, because that's what's going to get the eyes and get the money from what you're saying. Who wants to watch these, what are you called, spares play? Why were we going to watch, however 50, 60, 70, 100 guy pools when we can just watch the top 15 of the best golfers?
Well, that's what happens on the tour when you get in the majors. And if you can't qualify for a major when you're not one of the top guys, how are you supposed to comment on it?
He's not.
The revenue, the guys that really should be complaining about the money are the top guys, because they're bringing in the most money and having it trickle down to all the other guys on tour. And now when they win, those guys, or they contend well, their benefits of it, those guys that get top 30s every week have a nice career and are able to make a ton of money on tour if they have a 10 to 15 year career. And you'll be shocked at how, like, Charlie Hoffman's made $35 million playing golf. I think he's won like twice. Like, that's, and he's had a career of like 15 years on tour. That's a great living right there. But like the top guys, those are the guys people want to watch and everything. It's the same thing that happens in other sports. Like I just am so surprised that a guy like him is just like, yeah, in the majors thing, he's going off on that. But But the main thing is that Phil is the one going back to the Saudi league. He's stirring the pot, trying to get leverage from the tour and everything. We'll have to see if he actually goes and joins the Saudi tour. Also in this biography, it sounds like Phil's in some financial issues too. He's got some big time financial problems. Is that shocking to you?
No, not really.
So he sold his plane, his Gulfstream, and in this Alan Shipnick article that was out yesterday, people that he talked to were like floored that Phil sold this Gulfstream plane. They were like, him and Amy loved this plane like almost as much as their child. Like, this is one of their favorite things ever. And they sold the plane, and he's got a bunch of like outstanding, he's got some financial issues that is one of the major reasons why he's coming up with this. So we'll have to continue to follow that. That's interesting. And there's in this book that's coming out about Phil, there's supposed to be some big gambling stories in there, which we all knew Phil was a big gambler. Like the Tuesday practice round games, it's like 10, they're playing for like 10 grand, if not more, a hole. So we'll have to cease. But a lot of this is stemming from Phil's financial issues, which you could say you would think a guy like Phil would be able to, who's made probably, I don't know, $400 million in his career on and off the course, if not more, would be able to do a little bit better. But then when you're doing insider trading, are you surprised about that?
Exactly.
But that's what's going on in the golf world. So we'll have to see, I guess, a couple weeks away. But who knows? Everything seems to be moving quickly and more things coming out right now. But lots of interesting stuff off the course. And the top 10 players in the world are all playing right now at Riviera this weekend. So that should be a good tournament over there. All right. NFL, some cleanup from the past weekend. Well, we had the Cowboys story with Rich Dalrymple coming out. Was that Wednesday afternoon? His peeping Tomness to the cheerleaders, and I guess potentially Jerry's daughter. Which the thing about that is, like, how I find that one a little more far-fetched, just because you would think if Jerry knew that, he would fire someone that's taking that of his daughter. But
yeah,
the cheerleader thing seems, I would pretty much believe that, because also Don Van Natta, the reporter who did it, he doesn't mess around. Like, he's one of the most respected investigative reporters out there. Like, he's done stories on Jerry before. He did them on Robert Kraft. Like, him and Seth Wickersham team up a bunch. Like, when Don Van Natta writes a piece, it means business.
Yeah, I mean, it's and this is why I was getting my hopes up that Daniel Snyder was going to have to sell the team, because there's a couple, not to bring this back about me or Washington, but, you know, there was a lot of talk the last week or two that after the latest allegations in a long line of allegations against Daniel Snyder, that he was actually going to be forced to sell the team. There was talks that Stephen Ross might have to sell the team because of his alleged, offering Brian Flores money to lose games on purpose, with him being invested in some kind of gambling stuff as well, Stephen Ross. But now seeing this and Jerry Jones, you can say loosely attached to it, I guess, because it did happen under his roof at his organization, that this is the exact reason why neither of those guys are going to have to sell their team, because, you dig deep enough, you know, and even if it's not as serious as secretly filming, you know, cheerleaders while they're changing, or even going back to the Robert Kraft thing down in the massage parlor in Jupiter, you know, all of these owners are going to have some kind of dirt, if you dig deep enough, that they don't want come to light, or that they have paid hush money for. And this is exactly why, nobody's going to ever, none of these owners are ever going to force the other one to sell his team, because they all know that, hey, if you look in my closet, there's plenty of skeletons there. So it's, it's a messy situation. It's tough knowing that in the NFC East, 50% of the teams have secretly filmed their cheerleaders changing. That's a tough look for the NFC East there. But just a wild story coming out of Dallas.
But I disagree with you on them forcing the sale of Ross or Dan Snyder. Like, Goodell at the press conference last week said, yeah, owners can force a force an owner to sell the team, they can force them out.
They can, but will they? I don't think they
will. Oh, I think they will. I think they will.
Hey, I'm right there. I hope so. I'm right there with you, but I just don't know. I don't think it's quite as close as I thought, as I was led to believe, just a week or two ago.
But like the Washington situation and what's being reported is different than the Dallas thing. Now, I think Dallas probably has a lot of skeletons, and Jerry Jones personally has a lot of skeletons in the closet that Rich Dalrymple knows a lot of. That's why they paid the $2 million settlement to the cheerleaders. Because Rich knows where all the Jerry skeletons are buried. Like, he knows, like, how many we saw Jerry with those photos in like Phoenix or whatever with those girls. That's not proper behavior from an NFL owner. Like, how much, like, you have, everybody's heard all the crazy stuff Jerry does. Like, there's
but see, that's the thing. Like, it's from what everybody can tell, it's all consensual. So Jerry likes to get a little freaky on the side. So what? You know what I mean?
But you don't know if you think that that's going on, I would probably have to guess there's more egregious things where it's not consensual.
I would tend to agree with you there, no doubt. But up to this point, all we've seen is that Jerry likes to get a little weird, a little freaky on the side, and everyone's in on it. You know, both parties, I should say, are in on it. So if that's just the case, I mean, I'm not going to knock a guy for, liking to let his hair down a little bit and get a little weird with it.
Yeah, but I'm just going to say, I think there's a lot more stuff on the Cowboys thing that's going on. And I was listening to The Ticket yesterday morning, and they were talking about this. So they didn't tell, David Moore said that they didn't tell the Cowboys, Don Van Ave, what the story was about going ahead. They said, hey, we got something going on here before Rich Dalrymple retired and things. But they... David Moore said, which is why I think that other things from the Cowboys are going to, he goes, they didn't know if it was going to be like about like alleged racism in the workplace, about misogyny in the workplace, about everything. And it just turned out to be this, like they were like, it could have been anything. Like,
yeah.
So you got to think stuff like this happened. But Washington, I mean, they got Dan Snyder's had the list of multiple investigations, and then he does his own investigation and all that stuff. Like, that's an issue for there. This whole Stephen Ross thing, which was the most amazing news dump I think I've ever seen before. At 1 a.m. on Monday morning, the wee hours after the Super Bowl, it's, oh, he could potentially lose his team because of the whole, their NFL's investigating that. Like, talk about a time for a news dump. Like, if Stephen Ross, if he's found that he was paying $100,000 to Brian Flores to lose games, like that, he's going to get his franchise taken away. Like, that's just against competitive balance and everything. Like, that's an egregious thing for an owner to do, even though he's trying to improve his team down the road.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I hope that something comes to light of this Dan Snyder situation. I'm not trying to hijack it and make it about them, but if they are able to force him out, nobody will be happier than this guy right here. But again, I just, it's tough to see. Cause I mean, even so, switching sports and going to the Donald Sterling thing where that was, I don't know, I would say less, what's the word? Like, not as bad as what Daniel Snyder's being accused of. Sure, Donald Sterling said some disgusting things, said some really bad things, and it was, the ultimate decision was, or the decision that was ultimately made was correct. But saying these things versus what Daniel Snyder's been accused of, which is, sexual misconduct in the workplace. You know, we talked about the voyeurism of the filming cheerleaders, making cheerleaders go out with season ticket holders or shareholders to keep them happy. Like, that stuff's gross. But even when they were trying to force Donald Sterling out, Mark Cuban was like, hey, wait, are we sure this is what we want to do? Because now we're setting a precedent of owners. If you screw up, we can force you out no matter what. You know, if we vote to force you out, like, it's pretty much a done deal. Like, you got to sell. So he was even thinking like, hey, yeah, I agree this guy should be out. But do we really want to set that precedent of if we don't like something he did, we can go ahead and do that? That's why I think this whole – because you know if Daniel Snyder gets forced out, he is pulling the rug out from everybody, and he's probably singing to the high heavens about everything he knows and everything and all the dirt he's got on everybody else. Cause he's the gross guy that if you want to get weird, you go to him and he gets weird with you. So, hey, I'm sure he has dirt on everybody, all other 31 of those owners, if something comes to him having to force the sell of the team.
You don't even need to look at across. You don't even need to go across.
The Jerry Richardson thing.
Yes. Yeah. They did the thing to Jerry Richardson.
But like but my point was that Mark Cuban kind of stepped up and was like, hey, do we really want to set this precedent of having to do this? That's the point that
but
I was.
But that doesn't have anything to do with the NFL. That's Mark Cuban with the NBA. You know, NFL owners don't care about the NBA.
Right. But my point being is that another owner spoke up and was like, do we really want to set this precedent for the NBA? And so now my point is, if they do this for Dan Snyder, then it's going to be that much easier to have to force guys out in the NFL.
But I'm not, they could just say, look what we did to Jerry Richardson. We forced him out to sell. They forced him to sell.
Yeah.
They did that 4 years ago in 2017, and they didn't force Dan Snyder out to sell right now. They haven't forced any other owners out. They just forced Jerry Richardson out when that stuff came out. So you could say, look, based on the merits we know, we forced Jerry Richardson out. They're protecting Dan Snyder for some reason right now, but it's a case by case basis. The owners can say that right now if that's really the case, because they proved it going back to 2017.
Yeah,
and it's not like what precedent we're setting. They're just going picking and choosing what owners they want in and what owners they don't want. At least that's what I think.
That statement right there of picking what owners they want and what owners they don't want, that's where it could get a little bit messy.
But so if you look at what the Jerry Richardson thing was, he had sexually suggestive language and behavior on at least one occasion, and then had a racial slur directed at an African-American Panthers scout. Four Panthers employees came out as anonymous sources, and they had monetary settlements for his inappropriate workplace conduct. What is different than Jerry Richardson did that Dan Snyder has done?
Nothing. Well, I mean, Daniel Snyder's has taken it to the, you know, to the next level, probably about 10 levels ahead.
So that's where it goes to picking and choosing who you want your owners to be. They decided, right, you know what? We don't want a 78-year-old Jerry Richardson owning the Carolina Panthers anymore. You're done.
And then that's why I'm saying, yeah, they forced him out. But again, because of the skis ball that Daniel Snyder is, I think that's why it's taken a little bit longer, a lot bit longer, to try to force him out, because he's done everything to, you know, kind of the highest level you can, almost, from what it seems, and done it numerous times.
But that's what my point of picking and choosing who you want your owners to be. They're doing that.
I don't know that they want Daniel Snyder to be an owner. I think they, like I said, they kind of have to make him or keep him as an owner.
They also had an owner get his company got everybody except for him got criminally charged in a truck stop fraud case. Like, they could have kicked him out if they wanted to, but now they just decided to stand by him. The FBI charged the whole company, pretty much. Like, they didn't do anything to Jimmy Haslam. They let him stay in there. Like, you could pretty much do pretty much anything as an NFL owner, and minus going to jail, it seems like, and you'll be fine. Except if you're Jerry Richardson. And the funniest thing was that they had to take down a statue outside the stadium. But
all because he wanted to wear jeans on Friday.
All because he wanted to wear jeans on a Friday there. All right, a couple things. The Olympics are on. Not a lot of people are watching.
I got to be honest with you. I have been checked out.
I watched. Last night was like the first night I didn't watch. The other night I watched a little skiing. I did watch some hockey in the morning going on, and I watched a little U.S. curling yesterday in the morning, but at night I haven't really been watching as much as I was. But have you seen the thing with, we have a good old Russian doping scandal on our hands.
Oh yeah,
here.
I've seen that.
And I feel bad for the 15-year-old that's the one that is really the true culprit in all this. And I mean, she's 15, so she tested positive for some heart medicine on like Christmas, from her Christmas Day test when they had their national championships. It came back. They let her compete in the team event. They let her compete in the short program. And it's just weird that they let her compete because she tested positive. She couldn't. And now who knows what I honestly really don't think she even knew what she was taking. She's 15. She's in Russia. The Russians are just having her say, hey, take this, take this, take this, take this, take this. And she's like, well, this is what I'm going to do. And then the pressure fell, got to her, and everything got to her on the long program. She fell twice, didn't medal. And like, all the, she's crying, I hate this, I want to leave. All the other Russians are on there who medaled are saying, I hate this sport, I don't want to go in there. Just a good Russian doping scandal is nice. And the problem is that you feel sorry for the athletes in this one, the coach and everybody else for the ROC. Again, Russia suspended from the Olympics going under the Russian flag for their Sochi doping scandal. So they have to go under the Russian Olympic Committee. Can't even go under the flag because of that. It's just sad. And it's tough to, like, we're all in the world of mental health and everything right now, and athletes and everything. Like, how about the girls, the 15-year-olds' mental health? Doesn't seem like it's in a good spot today.
100% agree. I mean, could not agree more about, you know, protecting her in a sense, because obviously, you know, you've heard stories about how Russia kind of runs their Olympic training and things like that outside of the doping part. But you know, it's very rigorous. It's, you know, it gets intense. And when you're training to be the best in the world, I can only imagine how hard they push these girls. And, you know, it's a freshman, a girl that, you know, she was over here. I don't know how they do, you know, grade school and stuff over in Russia, but it would be a freshman high school girl, you know, being given illegal substances to, you know, to dope for this figure skating. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, she probably, if she had the choice, she probably wouldn't do it, but she's also probably being told like, hey, no, you have to take this, you have to do this, blah, blah, blah. And it's tough because, I mean, it's a poor young, like I said, 15-year-old girl that would be a freshman in high school. And then to make matters worse, this is what really pissed me off about this whole situation, is the Sha'Carri Richardson's coming in and saying, oh, it's because it's a little white girl and I got busted for something that's, you know, I got disqualified because I tested positive for weed. It's like the fact that she couldn't realize that the reason I forget the young lady's name, the Russian skater. The reason she wasn't banned was because she's a protected athlete for
person.
Being a minor.
They call her a protected person because she's not 16. Person
because she is considered a minor. You are a grown ass woman and made the decision to smoke weed. And look, I'm one of the biggest proponents for weed should be legalized across the United States, 100%. But you're from Dallas, you're from Texas, where it is illegal. Probably some of still the harshest penalties for smoking weed or for having weed on you. So you're doing something that's illegal in your state, in your city. Yeah, do I agree that it should be? Absolutely not. But you are an adult woman that made that personal decision to do this, whereas this young lady was probably forced to take this heart medicine or whatever it was and forced to dope at 15 years old. That's what really pissed me off, trying to make this a black-white thing when that's not the case at all. This is a minor versus an adult thing.
Yeah, I really didn't pay any attention to what Sha'Carri Richardson said.
And then you go and run and get smoked. How about that? I mean, she at least was close to the medal podium. She finished fourth. And who knows, like you said, the mental health thing. You want to, you know, a 15-year-old girl, after going through all this stuff, probably not going to have your head in the right space and be super locked in to be able to land a quadruple single axel or whatever she did the first time around. Probably not going to be in the great headspace to be able to do that. So she just missed the podium and finishing fourth versus Sha'Carri Richardson, who went out and ran again and finished almost dead last, just got absolutely smoked. So Sha'Carri, how about you take a back seat here? Because this ain't about you. It's about the Russian Olympic Committee forcing these young girls to steal blood dope after their entire country was suspended from the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, she also fell twice in the long program or whatever, and she's never fell in a competitive skate before. So I think we could say her head was not in the right spot.
100%.
Just based on that. But they finished up.
I just realized the pun I made by Sha'Carri getting smoked. Didn't mean to, but it just came to mind.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're finishing up the U.S., the hockey, I thought they were going to make a run. They went undefeated, lose in a shootout to Slovakia.
Yeah.
Tough. I thought that was a tough. The women lose to Canada, 3-2. That's always a good game. I wish that would have been on the morning. I would have watched that, but they wrap up on Sunday. All right, NBA All-Star Weekend going on right now, or starting tonight in Cleveland. They had it for the 50th anniversary. They have it again for the 75th. So I think they have to make sure that the 100th anniversary is going to be in Cleveland. But All-Star Weekend's going on. All right. Man, Myles Garrett, All-Star Game MVP, was plus 250 earlier. Now it's even money. Everybody's on Myles. But the one the bet that I like from the All-Star Game, MVP. Lucas 12-1 to win MVP. That seems too high, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I don't know. He just doesn't seem like the type to go out there and want to, like, he doesn't seem the type to go out there and want to try to win MVP.
What?
Yeah.
I think, disagree.
I think Luka, like, he wants to use All-Star Weekend to, you know, chill out a little bit. And I just don't know. I don't know that he's not a starter, right?
No, he's not. He's not.
So I don't know that he's going to get enough playing time to even attempt, you know, to be able to attempt to be an MVP. But yeah, I think that's probably about right. I'd say maybe about 10-1 to maybe, yeah, 12-13-1. I think that's about where it should be.
I think that's too high. He's on a I know right, what you're doing right now really has no bearing in the All-Star game, but the dude's on a tear right now.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. And, yeah, got 49 last night.
And I can't believe that you said he just wants to take a chill through the, you don't think he wants to go out there and show out in front of, one of the most look at me guys in the NBA.
Totally agree. Totally.
So why
agree.
Would he not want to do that in the All-Star game?
Again, I think he would rather kind of chill out. I think that having to, you know, trying to go out and score, I know you don't have to score 30 to win the NBA All-Star MVP, but, I just think it's a little too tall of a task to ask Luka to do.
Oh, I think that's a ridiculous statement. I think.
Okay.
I think it is. I really, this is, he's the next guy to take, like, everybody knows how great he is. He's the next guy to take the mantle for take the whatever from there. And he's not going to want to go drop on 30 on a guy. Like, I think that he's going to go, he's ready. He's ready.
Okay,
to do this.
So then let's go ahead and make a bet then. I'll give you 15-1 odds that Luka wins MVP.
No, because he's still 15-1. I'm thinking he's a better bet to win MVP than Giannis. LeBron is sneaky because it's in Cleveland, but Morant, like Embiid at 6-1, like he's better than I think he's better than all those guys doing 12-1. I just can't believe.
No, I think Ja is the perfect guy to try to go win. NBA All-Star MVP right now.
Well, yeah, he'll try and go, but I don't think he's going to do it. I just can't believe that you think that Luka's, I want to take Cat. The guy that wants the spotlight more than anybody is going to go into All-Star Weekend and just casually, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go casually into this.
Yeah.
I don't understand that reasoning.
Then put your money where your mouth is.
I'm betting it. I'm not going to bet against you. I'm betting it on my own.
Okay.
Why would I bet it against you?
Well, because you said how ridiculous my statement was. So
I'm already, because I think it is. You said that you don't think he's going to, you just said he doesn't think he's going to take All-Stars seriously or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Go out there and have fun. I think he's going to chuck up a couple threes, throw up a couple alley-oops, maybe hit a couple step backs. And I think that's,
they all do that.
Right. And I think that's just going to be Luka's. I think that's going to be Luka's All-Star weekend.
I don't think so. On the heater he's in, he wants to, and how well the Mavs are playing, I think he's going to want to go out and win MVP. The thing that is shocking to me, Darius Garland, when I looked this morning at about 6 o'clock, he was 40-1. Now he's already bet down to 18-1. So people are big on the hometown guy trying to guard getting MVP. He's not going to play enough to get MVP as much. I'd like him to win MVP. And then another thing on the dunk contest, if one of these guys in the dunk contest, it's a weak crowd. Do you even know who's in it?
I was literally grabbed my phone to look up because I know it's not anybody of note, or else I probably would have heard about it by now.
So it's Jalen Green, Obi Toppin, Cole Anthony, and Juan Toscano-Anderson.
I'd say either Jalen Green or Obi Toppin.
Yeah, they're the two favorites. One of these guys, though, if any four of these guys don't, you want to win the crowd over. The only dunk contest that Kobe won was in Cleveland in 1997. If one of these guys doesn't go to YouTube and put the Kobe jersey on and do one of the dunks that he did, they It's a these guys should never be allowed to participate in a dunk contest again. This is easy crowd play, an easy thing to do. If none of them do it, that's a big miss. That's just a free thing to do.
Oh no, you're right. Yeah, everybody loves a good little bit of nostalgia, and a good callback. And the Cleveland fans will definitely love that, no doubt. I'm going to go back and look at, because I don't remember exactly which. Oh, go out there wearing the Lakers warm up. He would dunked in the warm up jersey. Just do that.
Yeah, something. Any Kobe thing. He'll do that. I watched the dunk contest yesterday. The crowd was loving Kobe in '97 because he was a rookie, and they were loving Kobe in 1997. All right, one other thing. I tweeted about this. I'm not a big morning TV ESPN guy, but Wednesdays at 9 a.m., you'll find me locked in on First Take now going forward.
Mad Dog Russo.
Mad Dog Russo, let me tell you, Mad Dog, he's him and Francesa obviously started the whole thing when they're on the Fan. But Russo, Mad Dog Russo to me is hilarious. You know, you just have to understand that they're both yelling at each other. Like he was whining. Stephen A's met his match with the doggy, I think. After watching on Wednesday, I don't think it's really implied to be unintentional comedy out there, what they're doing, but I was laughing my ass off at them. I mean, they were able to get fired up over an argument on what title meant more to LA, the Lakers, Rams, or Dodgers. Like they were getting heated on that. It was great performance art by both of them. But I think Stephen A, look, he might have met his match. He was pretzeled a couple times out there. It was highly entertaining television.
Very entertaining. You know, Mad Dog's got that high pitched kind of voice when he starts going, and it's just, you know, it's funny entertainment. The one thing that really got me was Russo kept talking to Molly Quorum, or like making his argument and looking at her. And Stephen A was like, "You are debating me. Look at me. Look at me. You are debating me." That I don't know why, but that just got me, like, you know, look right here, you know, MF-er, I'm the guy you're talking to. But I think Russo is kind of doing that thing like, "Hey, I'm looking at you, but obviously I'm talking to him," type of deal. But yeah, very entertaining. Like you said, Stephen A did get pretzeled a couple times, but I just think it's because of Mad Dog's, I guess, lunacy, for lack of a better word, with some of his arguments and some of his takes. But it's I would take that over Skip and Stephen A 5 days a week, that's for sure.
I did a Twitter search of First Take on Wednesday just to see what people were saying, because I imagine the demographic that watches First Take probably isn't really aware of Chris Mad Dog Russo and what his chops on the what his skins on the wall are. And you would be rightly so, as people said, "Who is this Skip Bayless lookalike? Who was this Skip Bayless wannabe out there?" and everything along those lines.
Which, whoa, whoa, whoa. Mad Dog walks so Skip Bayless can
walk. I know. But what did I just say? The people don't know they don't know the skins on the wall of Mad Dog.
Yeah, the OG. The OG. Some might even say he started it so that Kornheiser and Wilbon could do their thing.
Well, yeah, him and Francesa were the first guys to ever do sports talk radio, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Not first guys ever do sports talk radio, but do
like a dual kind of not argumentative, but kind of, you know, a back and forth.
Yeah, show together and everything. And they were on for 6 hours a day. They did from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. six hours a day. And they would just pound calls and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he was there. He was the original guy. And then he's now on MLB Network. And he's still got a serious show, but yeah, the high pitched voice he gets aggravated about. I mean, he gets that high pitched voice about everything. The funniest thing was the Dak and Kirk Cousins part.
Yeah.
He said when he did this is how you know Mad Dog Russo is he's just so true, like old school, tried and true sports talk radio guy. The one thing that you could say that like makes your point about if someone's better not if it's even true, but just like, have they won a road playoff game? Have they won a playoff game on the road? Well, Kirk Cousins had, like, when he did that, I was like, this is Mad Dog to a T right here. This is great stuff.
Yeah. Find the argument that kind of, or find the stat that shapes your argument and makes you right. And just keep pounding that over and over again.
Yes. And he had Stephen A just floored that he said Kirk Cousins. And Russo was like, he did the great thing too. Like, Kirk Cousins, he won a road playoff game. I don't know if I believe he's better, but he won a road playoff game playing both sides of the fence. But I'm glad you watched, because I mean, I haven't watched First Take in forever, but Wednesday I will be, I'll be locked into First Take to see what they got cooking up with Russo.
Yeah.
And Stephen A. was coming out again and saying, like, he was validating his decision to kick Kellerman to the curb and everything like that. And I was like, geez, frosty relationship over there.
Seems to happen wherever Kellerman goes. It's weird.
I guess he said we don't talk, but we say hi in the hallways or whatever. But there's some other that's going on. And then we had some nice, from the internet world, we had some nice Twitter battles going on between the Acho brothers and Doug Gottlieb.
No, I didn't. But I do have an issue with one of the Acho brothers.
I have an issue with both of them.
I don't know which one it was. Who's the one that goes on Get Up all the time? Is that Emmanuel or is that Sam?
I don't know. They're both on ESPN now, I guess.
Right. But what there? I think there's one that goes on Get Up more often than not.
Probably Emmanuel Acho.
And this is, look, you're probably going to be shocked about what the arguments that I'm mad at him, or not mad at, upset with him for making. This guy goes on there, he's talking about the Cowboys, and he goes, this team has a top five passing offense. This team has a defense that looks like it's up and coming with some great pieces. The offense is loaded with weapons, yada, yada. They've, you know, made some great draft picks. They, you know, bringing over Amari Cooper in a trade. It's worked out well for them. Again, they've drafted well. They've signed a couple guys. They've made sure they re-signed a couple guys. They've done really well. But Jerry Jones needs to step aside and let the football guys handle the football decisions. Did you not just contradict yourself on what you just said? Who's the GM of the Dallas Cowboys?
Jerry.
So who's going to be making those signings? Who's going to be approving those draft picks? Who's going to be bringing these pieces together? No doubt they've had a good coaching staff. Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore has done a great job. Kellen Moore especially has done a great job with that offense. Defense played really well. Dan Quinn bringing him in, obviously great compared to last year. But when you go out there and say, oh, Jerry needs to step aside and let some of these football guys handle decisions, you literally just said he's constructed a great roster. I think Jerry Jones, sneaky, is a better GM than people give him credit for.
I don't think that Jerry's the one. Jerry's the figurehead GM. He's not the one.
So you might. Right. Okay, fine. But you don't think he has final say?
If he had final say, they would have drafted Johnny Manziel.
That, honestly, I knew that was going to come up. I knew that argument was going to come up. But nonetheless, so again, I still think he has final say. So the fact that he was smart enough to maybe step aside and say, okay, fine, unless they just straight up said, hey, Jerry, we're going to go ahead and take this one, fine. But nonetheless, I mean, you can't tell me that CeeDee Lamb pick doesn't have Jarrow written all over it. I think that was still a decent pick. Micah Parsons, they make the trade for him and go and get him. Obviously, fantastic pick. So just the contradiction of this team is constructed really well. This team has some great players. This team, you know, has some great pieces. But Jerry Jones is a terrible GM. Idiot.
So when they draft Micah Parsons, do you think Jerry's working the phones in the draft room, calling all the teams to trade down, and then say, hey, we're going to trade down because we're going to take Micah Parsons? That's like Will McClay doing it, who they can't continue to give a raise because he's pretty much the de facto GM without the title.
But still, I still think Jerry's giving final say. Jerry is okaying. Jerry's signing off.
Oh, obviously he's the owner. Every owner has to decide, has to approve of a draft pick or a signing or anything.
As far as the GM role.
I just think Will McClay will be like, hey, this is what we're going to do. And Jerry's going to say, yeah, that's what we're doing. And he might have he has a little more say than other owners in who they're drafting and who they're not, of saying, hey, maybe what about this or something. But I think it really comes down to Steven and Will McClay, and Jerry's just listening to them and hearing what they have to say.
Okay, maybe I got a little more bent out of shape with that argument than I should have.
Probably. Why would you even care about the Cowboys and the Jerry Jones thing?
Exactly.
You don't even like them.
Exactly. Why do you care? That's why I got so fired up. And that's why I was surprised I got so fired up about it. I was like, are we
You're just a Jerry stan.
You know, I like what the guy stands for. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't care why you got so bent out of shape about Jerry Jones
either.
Thing.
I don't either. And that's why it ignited something in me. I was like, this guy is an idiot. What is he talking about right now? You literally just contradicted yourself in 2 seconds, which is very run of the mill on ESPN nowadays. But nonetheless, that's why, again, I was shocked that I got as fired up about it as I did.
Yeah, that's I don't know what to tell you.
Me neither.
All right. That'll do it for us. On today's episode of The Short Thing, we'll be back on Monday. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you then.